Welcome back into Drive Time Sports, live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, thrilled to bring in our next guest. We're going to talk college athletics and a first-time guest here on the show. He is the athletic director at the University of Hawaii, Craig Angelus, and he's dedicated about three decades of his life to college athletics, and that's a landscape that has changed drastically over just the last couple of years, much less the last 30. So Craig is joining us right now. We'll talk about a variety of topics. Craig Angelus, athletic director at the University of Hawaii. Craig, great to get you on the show today. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's good to be back on in my home state.
Yeah, you and I were talking a bit about that off the cuff. You've been through Price many times.
Many times. I grew up in Salt Lake City, and we'd always go to Lake Powell. We had a boat, so we'd always go to Lake Powell and went through Price many, many times, stopped at all the locations there to eat there. And it holds a dear place in my heart. My dad actually used to play baseball and helper, as he'd always talk about those days of playing baseball and helper. So we kind of feel a little bit of a connection there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. One of the best ballparks, I think, in the state, especially from the Legion ranks out in Helper. So, yeah, it's great to have that little connection here to Eastern Utah. And Craig, I've been looking forward to this conversation because I think the business aspect of athletics is something that's always kind of fascinated me. And as I was gearing up for this interview, one of the things that really stands out, I mean, you become the athletic director at Hawaii in 2023, but you've dedicated your entire life to collegiate athletics.
Yeah, that's true. I played baseball at BYU, and then, of course, I went to law school after that because I didn't really know what else to do. And so right after that, I was like, well, how do I combine my athletics interests with my legal interests? And so asking around, even before the internet, people suggested I apply at the NCAA, which was the national, it's the headquarters, and they used to hire a lot of people with legal backgrounds. And so I found a publication, I applied cold, and I actually got the job out there in Kansas City where the NCAA was, and was in charge of interpreting all the rules and regulations of the association. So once I got there, then I had connections in college athletics, and then I went from there to University of Miami and Indiana. I was an athletic director at Florida Atlantic University for like 9 years in Boca Raton, Florida. I was at University of South Florida. I was at Temple University in Philadelphia for a number of years. I was in Long Island for a little bit, and now I'm out here in Hawaii. So, yeah, I've been in the business probably 30 years. Been about 8 different schools in the NCAA. And so, yeah, I've been a number 2 guy at about 6 schools. I've been a number 1 guy at 2 schools now. So it's an interesting profession. It's a great profession, but you got to be willing to move and be, if you want to move yourself up. And that's the hard part. That's why a lot of people don't get into it at times, because they just don't want to move their families around the country, which is what I ended up doing. So, but it's been a good run so far, and hopefully I have another 10 years left in me.
I think an interesting aspect that maybe the average sports fan doesn't necessarily take into consideration too much, and I want to get your perspective on it, is the idea of going from school to school where there's different cultures, there's different expectations. I mean, there's obviously a big difference if you're climbing up or if you're going down, but in the same sense, the idea ultimately is the same, right? I mean, the goal is ultimately the same everywhere you go. You're just dealing with a different culture, a different environment. Is that accurate to say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every place you go, they'll all say, we're different here. We're different here. And I've heard that at 8 different schools. We're different here. It's a different culture, et cetera. And it truly is. I mean, every place in America is different. We've all lived maybe at different locations. And it's always different, but it's not so unique that it's one can't adapt. But I will say places like Indiana. When I went to Indiana, they're all about Hoosiers. It's the Indiana Hoosier. And if you're not from Indiana, then it was like, well, you're not one of us because you're not a Hoosier kind of thing. And we used to laugh at that, but it was true. You come to Hawaii, very similar. It's like the culture in Hawaii is different. We're different here. We're from the island. We've got a very diverse group of people. We're not used to having, people coming in from the mainland always, and taking some of these positions. And so, it's different every place you go. But I will say Hawaii is probably the most unique. You don't have a lot of people coming and going there. People have been on the island most of their life. In fact, most people living in or working in our athletic department have really just been on the island their whole life. So you have a new person coming in from the outside, and that's not always an easy mesh. because you're like, well, have you thought about this? Hey, maybe we could try this. And sometimes they're receptive, sometimes they're not. So it's just about trying to integrate yourself into each culture you go to and be part of them, respect their culture, look, as I say, look, listen, learn, and not come in and act like you know it all or have all the answers, you know, that you're gonna save them from themselves, so to speak. So if you can kind of take that gentle approach and mesh yourself in there, and like I always say, even in Hawaii, it's like kindness is a universal action that everyone understands no matter what culture you're in. So I think that if you can top it off with being kind to people and whatnot, then that helps integrate a little bit better than if you're coming in there on a power trip.
Again, Craig Angelus, our guest right now. He is the athletic director at Hawaii. As far as Hawaii being different, look, there's no other school in the country that has to deal with a minimum 4.5-5 hour flight for every road game, right? That's something Hawaii has that nobody else has.
Yeah, that's been an interesting discussion, with all the conference realignment and people like Stanford and UCLA and all those have to go to the East Coast now and all this. And the thing that people don't realize is that Hawaii's been doing that for their whole existence, because any team, the tennis team, the track team, the football team, if they go play an away game, it's a 5-hour trip just to California. And so that's a tough schedule. You have to usually go a day earlier, usually come back a day later. It takes its toll on your academics, on your budget, of course, but the wear and tear on the body. I mean, even in football, for example, last year was my first year, and I got on the plane, and other than one trip to Vanderbilt, we all flew commercial, and they're used to flying commercial for many years there. And so I was like, well, how about if we don't go so many days in advance, and we charter, and we come back home the night of, 2 hours after the game's over, wheels are up, and we're heading back home, like every other team on the mainland. Every team does that on the mainland of football. But yeah, we were going, on a Tuesday, a Wednesday, we weren't getting home till Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, and trying to, do that every week. And it really takes its toll on the players, and they don't get days off. They can't have a regular practice schedule. So that's one of those things, like, how about if we charter? So now we're going to charter all of our games this year back and forth. So that should be a big benefit for us. So you got to make adjustments, every place you're at, and especially in Hawaii here. You got to make adjustments based on your circumstances. But, one last thing, as you said, there's no other Division I school within 2,500 miles of it. So it's not like you can go down the street and play a midweek baseball game or something. There's no one around, and so you've got to make a concerted effort to get there. And then when people come to play you have to pay them. You have to subsidize them. Like we, in the Mountain West, we have to pay teams $150,000 if they're on the coast to come play us in football. If they're inland, like Utah State, we have to pay $175 a game for them to come. And then in our other sports, we have to pay our other conference for them to come in too. So yeah, a lot of challenges, but it's great being there.
With those challenges, I mean, we can talk about conference realignment here for a moment. And the way college athletics has shifted, and I know we'll have plenty of time to get into this, but nonetheless, being in Hawaii, you have one foot in the Mountain West, you have one in the Big West, right? How has conference realignment really affected what you want to accomplish athletically at Hawaii?
Well, I mean, everybody's chasing the dollar. I mean, that dollar is the thing that's led to the conference realignment at every level, and it continues to. So we're all chasing that dollar. We're in a solid football conference, the Mountain West. We're in the Big West for our other sports, which seems to work. It's the, the Big West consists of six or five Cal State schools and five UC schools. So there's 10 state institutions in California and us. Competition level's a little less than the Mountain West, of course, but our teams seem to do very well there. The Mountain West, we're in for football. We're, 80% of their revenues come from football. So we're a good player there. But I think, we're just coming off of these Mountain West meetings here. I'm in Lake Tahoe right now, and we're just breaking from our meetings. And that's been the discussion, where does our conference go? And where does Washington State and Oregon State go? Do we somehow combine with them in the next couple years, or are they going to go their direction and try to get in with the ACC or the Big 12? Where does that leave us as a big a Mountain West conference? So our television deal is coming due in 2 years, so we want to be well-positioned for that with the Mountain West. But yeah, I mean, I think we don't see our teams being picked off for the Big 12 or the ACC or the Big 10 or the SEC. They were going to be picked off, I'm sure, if the Pac-12 But with that implosion, I think we're all sitting right here now looking to see how we can grow our existing brand and whether that consists of us staying at 12 schools or if that includes us adding Washington State and Oregon State under the Mountain West, or whether we do it under the flag of the Pac-12 or Pac-14, and then seeing what kind of media rights deal, television deals we can get for all of us here. So, and it might be that we just stay as a conference at 12 and those other two teams go do their own thing. So it remains to be seen in the next couple of years. The contract is coming due in June of 2026. So we're working on it now. So, we'll see where we're going. But I don't see anybody shaking up here in the Mountain West and bolting to one of those other conferences. I just can't see that right now.
That was going to be my next question. I mean, with the implosion of the Pac-12, as we sit here now in June of 2024, I don't know if contentment is the right word, but I mean, do you feel as if things have kind of settled a little bit? I mean, but based off that last answer, Craig, it kind of leads me to believe that right now you guys feel like you're in a pretty good spot.
Well, I think so, but I think if Colorado State or any of these schools could be picked up in the Big 12, for example, and go from a $5 million a year payout under our television deal to a $35 million a year per school, I think any one of us would probably bolt for that, right? Because we're all chasing that dollar. But I don't think that opportunity is going to be extended here. I do think the other option out there that I know those other two schools, Pac-12, Pac-2 schools are looking at is whether they can rebuild the Pac-12. You know, you need 8 schools to be a conference. And can they take those 2 that they already have, pick off some top schools in the Mountain West, maybe a couple schools in the American, and reformulate like a Pac-8 kind of deal? Because you only need 8. And if so, would that bear real fruit in the television market for them? I mean, because if you think about it, the Pac-2 got left behind. Those 2 teams got left behind. So they didn't. There wasn't that value in the television market. That's why they got left behind. The Mountain West schools, we're only getting about $5 million a year. Now, hopefully we can expand that. But we're not marquee names either that the television markets are going after. And in American, they're getting about $7 million a year per school. And so it's not like people are seeking after Tulsa and Tulane and those schools either. So it does beg the question in my mind, if the Pac-2 decides to add 3 or 4 schools here and 3 or 4 schools from the American, is that going to garner a huge television contract? I just don't see it because there's schools that have been passed over. So I just don't see it. But, and then, of course, whether that could actually happen, there's buyouts if in the Mountain West. If you give them a 1-year notice, it's a $34 million payout to the conference. If you give them a 2-year notice, it's $17 million. So if all these schools decided to leave too, they'd have to pay their buyouts, et cetera, and it could get very expensive. And to chase what? To chase $10 million a year per school, perhaps? I don't know. So I just think you kind of have to read the room in the Mountain West and see where we are and try to expand, do the best we can with the schools we have.
Craig Angelis, again, athletic director at Hawaii, joining us right now. Craig, for going back to what we talked about, for all the years you've given to college athletics, as we sit here in 2024 and we talk about conference realignment, we talk about the transfer portal and NILs, did you ever see something this chaotic on the horizon in college athletics, even 20 years ago?
No, not at all. The reason I say that is working at the NCAA, and I interpreted all the rules and regulations. So there's probably 10 or 12 of us that were what we consider rules experts who were telling everybody what you can and cannot do under the legislation and helping draft it and that kind of stuff according to the membership's wishes. But Walter Byers, who started this like in, I don't know, 57, I believe, he was an iron-fisted person, and it was like, this is the way it's going to be. And the membership has always been pretty iron-fisted with some of these rules. And even when they've got criticized, it's like, no, sorry, student athletes, you can't monetize your name, image, and likeness. I know you complain that your jersey is being sold in the bookstore and the university's making money off it, but sorry, under the rules, you can't professionalize yourself and can't sell autographs or sell your jerseys or anything like that. And everyone's just kind of taking it. And so I thought that there were some modifications going on along the way, but never did I envision that it would be blown up like this, because now what's happened is, just like the name, image, and likeness, people thought, it would be good for student-athletes to be able to monetize those things. So I think that's a great thing. And we all thought, oh, okay, fine, that's good. But it turned out to you know, selling your jersey and signing autographs and making some money on the side to the collectives now, where you can make hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, and couple that with the transfer portal where you can be an unlimited free agency or unlimited free agent and go from school to school. And there's no salary cap either from schools to schools like there is. There's no regulation in the marketplace like there is in pro sports. And so it's so chaotic. And then you drop on top of that now the house case settlement. Those antitrust suits have been going on because everybody's been suing the NCAA, been suing their schools anytime. And I think that's the biggest thing in the last 5-10 years. Anytime schools or student-athletes, I'm sure, I guess, not necessarily schools, but student-athletes haven't liked the ruling that's been affected them or whatever, we're going to sue. And so you have all these lawsuits. I think I was in a meeting last week. They told me there's about 640 lawsuits that are currently out there in the country right now involving college athletes of some sort. 640. But anyway, most recently the house suit was settled. And so now, you know, there's going to be roster management or roster limits now. Instead of scholarship limits, going to be roster limits, which is going to affect everything. Instead of, you know, now you can have a revenue share with the players. I mean, it's so different than anyone ever imagined either, even 2, 3, 4 years ago to where it's at now. So it's really at a crossroads to see where it's going to go. But I think in the next 10 years now, the CFP contract goes for the next 10 years. The house settlement now is for the next 10 years. So I think the next 10 years will calm down a little bit, but we'll see what happens at the end of that 10-year time period.
Yeah, so 10 years, it settles down a little bit. But when we take a look at the transfer portal and we take a look at NILs, I'm kind of of the mindset right now, it is what it is, at least for the time being, right?
Oh, yeah, that's not changing. That's not changing. And then the collectives, I'll be interested to see how long the collectives are sustained because, you know, the collectives, if the listeners don't know, is basically people outside of an athletic department, donors, fans, et cetera, who decide, let's all get together and put money into a pot. And then we'll have someone kind of direct the money. And so the coaches will sign these players. They'll say, you know, go see our executive director of our collective. The collective person will say, okay, listen, so you're a starting quarterback here, or starting offensive lineman. We're going to give you about $225,000. We're going to sign you to, you know, 2 6-month deals to make sure you've got to do something in return. You know, you've got to tweet, you've got to make some appearances, you've got to do this kind of thing, and you enter some type of contract. But that's not going away. That whole NIL collective is not going away. But we'll see, you know, is it just going to now be in the top four Power Four conferences and the group of five are going to say we don't have the money to do that? Is it going to separate out into the major leagues and AAA, so to speak? That's what I'm curious to see because I don't know how the group of five is going to keep up with Big Brother because they're distancing themselves more and more all the time. And you know, little brother's trying to keep up with Big Brother. And at what point do we become like the AAA program and they pluck off our best players, you know, because they can pay them and we're not paying them, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I say that 10-year window, but it's going to continue to ratchet up, you know, day after day, week after week, year after year. Now, because we're in this new world that we're in right now.
Craig Angelis, again, athletic director at Hawaii. Craig, I could sit here and have this conversation with you all day. It's absolutely fascinating. I know you are busy. I definitely do appreciate you taking out the time. Hopefully it's not the last time we get you on the air because that was a lot of fun to kind of hear about what's happening right now. I think conference realignment is something that you don't necessarily have to have a great feel as a fan, as a casual fan. You don't have to have a great feel for the transfer portal, NIL, house settlement, any of that to really get involved in the conference realignment. I think that's something that people right now we're just really fascinated with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and think about it. Everyone's chasing the money. So you know, that's why BYU, they were looking to try to get into a conference because as an independent, you know, they're not making the kind of money they will be now in the conference. Now they'll be getting, you know, $35 to $40 million a year coming from their conference now. And so everybody's just chasing the money, and that's what fuels the conference realignment. And of course, the schools that are currently there, they don't want to take a cut of their share. But, you know, hopefully by addition, you know, 1 + 1 = 3. So now not only the new team's going to get their money, like a BYU in the Big 12, but the Big 12, the current schools are going to be increased also. And so that's why they keep chasing. Everybody's chasing this and it's totally driven by television money. And it's kind of unfortunate. you know, a lot of things have gone by the wayside in traditional college sports, but it is the way of the future. And so, you know, you got to embrace it.
Craig, once again, thank you so much for taking out the time to join us. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime.
Again, that's Craig Angeles. He is the athletic director at the University of Hawaii. Great to get Craig on the show and also his perspective. You can follow him on Twitter. It's at CW Angeles, at CWANGELOS. I'm fascinated by this new era of college sports. So to get Craig on the show, a really fun conversation. We're going to pause one more time. We'll come back. We'll put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios.